Well, hey, Sean. Hey, Laurel.
John! Welcome back, buddy!
Oh, it's so good to have you back, John.
Oh, thanks. It's good to be back. So what did I miss?
Let's see. You left on February 20th. Oh, that was the night they had that big Democratic presidential debate.
Oh, man.
All the candidates on stage. See, there were 6 or 7 viable candidates back then. There are now...
2.
Yeah, down to 2. Oh, and when you left, the coronavirus was largely an issue in Asian nations.
Now it is a much bigger deal here, for sure.
Yeah, and when you left, the Dow Jones was up above 29,000, which is high.
Now it's like 25,000, not doing so well.
Okay, yeah, that is a lot. But what about here in Wisconsin?
Oh, you know, been kind of quiet.
Yeah, the governor just signed like 100 bills.
That's all.
Oh, all right then. Well, sounds like we have a lot to talk about. This is the WPR Politics Podcast. I'm John K. Wilson.
I'm Sean Johnson.
And I'm Laurel White.
This week, we talk about all the news I missed. It was a lot, I guess. I know you like that. How long you been back, man? I see the girls in the club, they're getting wild for me. And all the pretty chicks all wanna smile at me. These rap cats, man, they all got this style for me. And if I ever see them, man, they probably bow to me. That bouncy number, of course, is Mace with his 2004 song Welcome Back, which heavily samples the 1976 song by John Sebastian, also titled Welcome Back, which was the theme song for the 1970 sitcom Welcome Back, Kotter.
Good job, John. Man, we needed you to be able to back announce stuff like that. Although everybody knows about Welcome Back, Kotter, so
we just knew you were looking for a reason to use an old sitcom.
Probably true. Yeah, I love them. Snapshots in time.
And I'm always looking for a reason to play any Bad Boys Records artist.
You have chosen a side in the 90s hip-hop battles. It's true.
Okay, well, all right, good. Can we talk about politics, please?
No.
Mm-mm. Not at all.
There's some stuff going on.
So really, John, things happened fast while you were out. And Just a note at the beginning. We are still a Wisconsin politics and government podcast. We know you can get your news about the coronavirus or the Dow Jones from other places, but these are huge stories that affect Wisconsin politics and government in important ways. And so I feel like it would be foolish for us to pretend that they're not happening, because they're pretty significant to what's happening there.
And where else are you going to go to hear about where the coronavirus is affecting Wisconsin politics?
I hope
we have a corner on that market. We might not.
I don't know.
Not on CNN, I'll tell you that.
But they are things that are happening quickly, and so is the Democratic presidential primary. I mean, the amount that has changed since you left is just astronomical.
I mean, I was here, and it was a lot.
It felt like a lot, yeah. There was that debate which we referenced, where all the candidates got up on stage for the first time with Mike Bloomberg. This was, he had been running hundreds of millions of dollars worth of ads and had shot himself up to number 2 in the most recent Marquette poll, above Joe Biden.
I listened to the podcast when I was gone, and you talked a lot about polling and Bloomberg's role in polling and where Bernie Sanders was, where Joe Biden was, where all these other candidates were who are now no longer candidates.
So much changed. When that Marquette poll of Wisconsin was done, Bernie Sanders was riding high. He had won the Nevada caucuses. He had won the New Hampshire primary outright. He had virtually tied Pete Buttigieg for the Iowa caucuses, going well for him. And then Pete Buttigieg drops out of the race.
Yeah. So, I mean, it was sort of like this pendulum of South Carolina and the South Carolina primary that everybody talked about.
That's right.
Joe Biden did really well in South Carolina. Pete Buttigieg dropped out, endorsed him. Then Amy Klobuchar dropped out, endorsed him.
Which sets the stage for Super Tuesday.
Which just was, I mean, people are calling it like the biggest political comeback in modern political history, basically. I mean, like, Joe Biden was polling really not well and swept a bunch of Super Tuesday states. And it's like a game changer.
And then, you know, after that happened, Mike Bloomberg, who had spent a half billion dollars on campaign ads, decided that he would also drop out.
Because a big part of his strategy was to do really well on Super
he
Tuesday.
Was, that's when he was jumping in.
Saying, you know what, Tuesday I'm ignoring states. Iowa, ignoring New Hampshire, and ignoring South Carolina.
And his strategy kind of was based on Biden faltering. Mm-hmm. And so Biden did nothing but anywhere close to faltering on Super Tuesday. He was just, killing it everywhere. And so Bloomberg drops out. And then Elizabeth Warren drops out.
Yep. Also sort of citing the Joe Biden doing really well on Super Tuesday. There wasn't really a path for Elizabeth Warren at that point to move forward. So,
I mean, she is in sort of the other, as they say, lane of the Democratic Party. She's in the left-leaning lane as opposed to the moderate lane, which is what cleared for Joe Biden.
Well, what she said, and then I promise we will start talking about Wisconsin a little bit more, but I think what she said in her remarks about leaving the race was like she thought there could be another lane created where there was kind of the Bernie lane and then there was the moderate lane, and she thought there could be something a little bit in the middle that she could kind of be there.
And the Elizabeth Warren lane?
Yeah, the Warren lane. And she was like, you know, I was wrong. There really wasn't a space for that lane. There's the Bernie lane and the Biden lane, and that's where we are right now, and that's what's going to happen. So.
And as of the recording of this podcast, she hasn't chosen whether she's going to endorse one of those lanes.
She hasn't merged.
She hasn't merged. That's much better. Well put.
Nice graphic. Thank
good you. Job. Good job. So as we promised, we're going to connect this to Wisconsin, right? What can we say about how this is going to affect the Wisconsin primary? Remember, this is a state that Bernie Sanders won in 2016. And in our most recent poll, he was leading, like, pretty comfortably. 29% of likely Democratic voters picked Bernie. Number two is Mike Bloomberg at 17% in that poll. So what are we supposed to make of this now that all these other candidates are out of there?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it's going to be a very different race, obviously, the next time there's a Marquette poll, with all these other candidates out and people deciding who basically their second choice is, so I think that's a very obvious way that the Wisconsin primary is going to be different. And that thing is coming up soon. I mean, we're basically a month away.
April 7th.
From our primary, which is crazy.
And there are some big states coming in between us, like really big states. So I don't expect the candidates to be able to focus on us too much yet.
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of big stuff that is going to happen between now and a month from now, obviously. I mean, we saw what happened in like 48 hours this week. We can't have that much of a change, but we do have some pretty big states weighing in before, the primary schedule gets to us. Florida has a lot of delegates. I think they have like 219 delegates.
You have Michigan, which is kind of a big prize for Democrats, mm-hmm. a Midwest state, one of those pivotal swing states, mm-hmm. and so
I mean, one that I feel like I would be looking at pre-Wisconsin as mm-hmm. like somewhat analogous to the way things might be going in Wisconsin's primary. I mean, obviously two different states, but two, upper Midwest, some industrial, some rural, mm-hmm. Similar age, class, race breakdowns, that sort of thing.
I think what's important to mention here is, like, obviously this isn't the general election, and, primary voters are different than general election voters. Primary voters coming out and deciding who they want the party's candidate to be is a very different sort of election. But there are things that we can take from these primaries that would give us some clues about where the state is positioning itself for the general election, and sort of like the Republican versus Democrat, all I can think of is battle. That's a weird word. Coming down the line, I think people are looking at things like turnout, like how energized are electorates in different states, how many people are voting for the different parties, and also like not only who wins the primary, but how much of a mandate and how much enthusiasm does that candidate seem to have in that state.
But I would say it's very much an open question right now. Mm-hmm. And I don't think, given what we have in front of us now, I'm not sure how much the last Marquette poll can tell us. I feel like there's so much in the news lately that is a reminder don't think you know what's going on. Like, don't think you know for sure what's going to happen. Like, to have those candidates drop out like that and the party just solidify around one candidate as their replacement, it's hard to predict stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And, you know, one thing I think we can look at if we're looking at the data that we have is Marquette did ask people, who's your second choice? Democratic voters, who's your second choice? Mm-hmm. If it's not, you know, Mike Bloomberg, if it's not Pete Buttigieg, if it's not Amy Klobuchar, if it's not Elizabeth Warren. And you can look at those and say for Bloomberg's people, Buttigieg's people, and Klobuchar's people, their second choice among the candidates remaining is Joe Biden. For Warren's people, their second choice by a mile in the Marquette survey was Bernie Sanders. But we don't know what role, like, momentum and sort of this desire to have the best candidate to beat Donald Trump mm-hmm. is going to play between now and then. It's just hard to predict that.
But it's also interesting to point out, you know, you say Elizabeth Warren's supporters said their second choice was Bernie Sanders. Say you add her numbers to Bernie's numbers, but you add up all of those. But Warren wasn't doing very well in the Marquette poll.
She was not. So it's not an enormous block of voters.
Right. But you add up the blocks of voters for the other people that were polling mm-hmm. better than she did, line those up behind Biden, and, you know, it's a very different dynamic.
So, of course, we're interested to see who's going to win Wisconsin. And whether we're going to have a competitive primary in Wisconsin is also a really key question here in this mm-hmm. state, because on April 7th, Wisconsin heads to the polls for a Supreme Court election between incumbent Justice Dan Kelly, who's facing his first election, and challenger Jill Karofsky, a Dane County judge. Karofsky is favored by Democrats. Kelly is favored by Republicans. It's a very partisan race, but it's officially nonpartisan. And so mm-hmm. Democrats are hoping to get a little turnout bump from that presidential primary. If there's not a competitive presidential primary, those hopes evaporate. Mm-hmm. So
that's been a huge conversation about that race from day one, is that, you know, what effect is the presidential primary going to have? And it was looking like, until this past week, Wisconsin would still be very much, you know, the primary would still be very much in the up in the air. Wisconsin would be very important in sort of weighing in this Democratic primary race that seemed to be sort of barreling toward a contested convention sort of situation.
Like a week ago, you know? We thought this.
Yeah. I mean, that's the other thing that I was going to mention too, is that this could play very differently for the convention that we are hosting than mm-hmm. what it looked yeah. like the True. Convention could have been, you know, as of a week or 2 weeks ago. Could it be like a coronation for one candidate who's, you know, between now and then picked up enough delegates, or is there going to be like a bunch of strife and anger and battling between delegates at this convention? We really don't know. At
we
this
don't
point.
Know. And a lot of it is going to be determined. It's like out of your control, Wisconsin. It's going to be determined by, you know, how Bernie Sanders does in Michigan, maybe, or, you know, other states that mm-hmm. are not you between now and April. So we'll see.
What about some of those other things that we mentioned in the intro that are big national and international stories, but that don't necessarily fall within our wheelhouse of Wisconsin politics, but also kind of do?
Yeah. So the coronavirus and, you know, COVID-19, which has been an issue largely in the U.S. now on the West Coast, there mm-hmm. have, especially in Seattle area, it's becoming a difficult issue for them. It is now something that people are paying attention to in Wisconsin state government. There was a briefing this week for, I think, any state official who wanted to attend. It was not like widely attended, but you had public health officials from our Department of Health Services talking to lawmakers. You know, I know the assembly speaker was there. He mm-hmm. said he cleared his schedule for it. You had
this
a few
was a
other
briefing
lawmakers.
That the governor called.
Yes. And it was kind of whatever questions that they had about mm-hmm. the COVID-19 they could ask. So it's a kind of thing that, you know, when the assembly speaker clears the schedule, when the governor mm-hmm. calls a briefing, it's got their attention, right?
So you listened into this. Like, what were some of the questions asked? I mean, was it kind of just very, are people just curious about how Wisconsin is prepared for this? Like, how the state is processing, you know, whatever?
The question I couldn't get out of my mind was Representative Michael Schrah, who is from Oshkosh, and he asked, and he said, hey, I have 8 prisons in my district. They are 15 to 30% understaffed right now.
Mm-hmm.
What happens if, there's an outbreak? And essentially they said that, he didn't really ask about this, but there's 2 issues in a prison. Prisoners could get sick, right. And guards, corrections officers could get sick. And so he's asking what happens, basically. And essentially the Department of Health Services said that they're in frequent contact with the Department of Corrections and kind of left it at that. So mm-hmm. I don't know what happens. Hopefully we don't have to find out, but mm-hmm. It's kind of question that sticks in your mind when you hear it. And other than that, it was, you had other questions about like, what's the difference between this and the seasonal flu? It's okay. A chance for lawmakers to ask questions sort of, like of those, health, those public health professionals.
None basic those, questions.
Exactly.
So one thing, just if folks aren't following it super closely in Wisconsin, tests are being processed in Milwaukee for Wisconsin,
and
right?
At the state health lab too. So we have the ability to process our tests here, which could potentially lead to a quicker turnaround for test results rather than having to ship them to Atlanta and have the CDC process them. We can do it here. So there's a state government angle, guys.
Yeah.
Also, wash your hands.
Oh, I'm touching my face.
Oh my God, you just did.
I was rubbing my eye.
Laurel just rubbed her eye, guys. Don't be like Laurel. Everyone, wash your hands. 20 seconds. Sing happy
Sean's
birthday twice.
Sean legitimately grabbed his head.
Oh like, no, was, you like, caused
holding,
me.
Was I was holding his, your
I just touched my temples. Like, no. Oh no.
Is a temple theoretically part of your face, though?
I think so. It's pretty close to your eyeballs.
That's true.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, so how about the stock market numbers that we mentioned in the intro, too?
You can put on some hand sanitizer here while I still have
talk,
some.
You're ready to talk about the stock market.
All right. The stock market. What could that possibly matter for Wisconsin, right?
Oh, but it sure does.
Okay. Yeah. One thing we should mention is that the stock market is not necessarily the economy. You know, this is investors who have been recently pretty panicked by what they're seeing with the coronavirus and worried about what it might mean for the economy and are pulling their money out of the market. So it is the kind of thing that, you know, perhaps they're overreacting and that the economy will kind of come out of this, you know, that I guess the sun comes up tomorrow and horrible things are happening in some parts of the country that are dealing with this, but that people kind of go on with their lives and the economy recovers. But if it doesn't, there's like potentially big consequences. So one would be potentially with our state budget.
Yeah. I mean, obviously, right? You know, if the economy isn't doing as well. And this is something that we talked about a lot during the last state budget negotiations, because lawmakers were saying, okay, things have been really good for a while now. Our rainy day fund has grown to levels that we haven't seen for quite a long time. And this is what we need to do. We sort of need to pack it away for a rainy day, right? Be prepared.
Yeah. And I can tell you that when they put out the last set of revenue estimates from the Fiscal Bureau, I don't believe that they had anything in there that talked about what happens if supply chains are cut off because of coronavirus, you know. These are things that they can't predict in these estimates. And so what if that's a factor? You know, it's a big what if.
Mm-hmm.
So it's early to like panic about that. But I mean, it's something that state government is always going to be an issue. State government's finances are contingent upon what happens in the world economy. Another thing politically is that if you look at these Marquette polls, Donald Trump's best area of like approval is with the economy.
Mm-hmm.
Even in this divided state, he gets in the high 50s for job approval rating of his handling of the economy. That's good for him. And I think the prevailing wisdom up until recently is that he would be able to kind of hang his hat on that, and that could help him in a state like Wisconsin. If people think the economy is good, that's good for the sitting president.
Mm-hmm.
At this point in March, I mean, I think it's at least safe to say we don't know what people are going to be thinking about the economy, right? We've hit a little bump in the road here. Sure. We don't know what's going to be like.
And again, we should say, like, we're not economics reporters, and the stock market is not.
It's way outside of our expertise. Also, very hard to predict.
But at the same time, President Trump himself does often point at the stock market specifically as, you know, a key indicator of the overall economy's health.
Yeah, yeah. I mean,
and
we just looked
that
at some.
He's been less vocal about now that, you know, we've had these declines.
Yes. That was a short answer because I feel like...
I answered my own question.
You did.
Well, do we want to get into some actual Wisconsin news?
We might as well.
Straight Wisconsin news?
Straight.
Just like a straight
Wisconsin.
Shot.
Straight, yeah. Just straight Korbel brandy.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah.
Yeah, let's do it. So the governor, since you've been gone, John, the governor signed like 80...
Since you've been gone.
Yeah. Missed opportunity.
Sorry. Aw, that would have been... Yeah,
okay, let's restart the podcast. That's good. Ready?
All right, you were saying.
So over the past 2 weeks, the governor has signed like 80 bills. He's vetoed several aside from those 80, but it brings the total number of laws from this legislative session to 184. So he's basically like doubled the number of laws that have come out of this legislative session. So he's been busy. It's been different, you know, because he hasn't been in, and lawmakers haven't been in Madison since they wrapped up the session. The governor's really been kind of like going all around the state, signing these different things in the areas that will be affected by them.
Signing them in like locations that seem like symbolically apt for what the law has to do with.
Right.
And where the lawmakers are based too, but yes, a combination of those.
Does he, like Walker did, bring a little wooden table to sign bills on?
I'm pretty sure he still has what John would refer to in our own conversations as the tiny table.
Mm-hmm.
I see these pictures of him sitting at the wooden table, and of course I've seen the wooden table in Madison, but this is fascinating.
John's obsessed with the tiny table. This hasn't come up on the podcast before.
Comparing
but he's
wood
like,
grains.
Well, I like to imagine that, like, you know, when the governor travels the state in a motorcade, one of the, you know, SUVs is just taken up with the little table in the back. Because, like, it's a little table, but
it's not a
folding
table.
No. It's like a, although small, a sturdy wooden table befitting, you know, capital furniture,
befitting
essentially.
Of a governor.
Yeah. Of signing bills. So
it would need its own SUV, or wouldn't it be funny if it was just like strapped to the top?
Right?
Like a big 6-foot table, like a dining room table.
Or like one of those little U-Haul trailers.
Or maybe they fold down like half the back seat to like make room for it, and then the governor is sitting like cramped.
He's a little crowded.
Next
like, no, it's
to the
cool.
Table.
I'm fine.
It's cool. We got me and Table are sharing the back seat.
Yeah, I'll just put my arm around.
He's a slim guy, you know.
Anyway, so what are some of these pieces of legislation that the governor signed while I was gone?
Well...
Sorry, we ran out of time. We talked about the table too much.
You got some, like, lightning round examples of some things that are now law?
Yeah, well, I mean, the big ones have been, you know, he vetoed the Republican tax cut. He vetoed 4 of the tougher on crime bills from Republicans. We've talked about them.
Well, we didn't talk about the vetoes, though. He vetoed those after we had recorded last week's podcast.
Right.
So, podcast audience, those tougher on crime bills, vetoed.
Yep.
4 of them.
Those are the ones that increase criminal penalties for some things in Wisconsin. Democrats were concerned about increasing prison population, the cost of that. The governor just pretty much aligned with their argument there and those vetoes. In terms of things that he has signed, some of the bigger ones, I think we've talked about the body camera bill on the podcast before.
A little bit.
This is one that was really contentious in the Capitol over the past several years. Law enforcement and open records people have really sparred over how to handle body cameras in Wisconsin. They got together. They hashed out a bill that they all agreed on. The governor signed it. Basically, it sets new standards for law enforcement, creating written policies for how body cameras are going to be handled there. Sets a 120-day minimum for retention of footage. And sets a standard for what records are released to the public and what exceptions there are for when they have to be released. So that's an interesting one. I think... I can't remember if we've talked about this on the podcast, but it's gotten a lot of headlines. The bestiality bill that makes that a felony in Wisconsin.
We have not talked about that one, but
this is Senator Andre Schock's bill.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's something he's been pushing for a while. Incidents in his district.
In his district. Yeah. A repeat offender who could not be charged with a specific violation of the law.
Right.
For doing those
right.
things.
Right. And there had been some pushback from other lawmakers, like, how widespread is this problem? Do we really need to have a felony on the books for this? But the governor went forward with signing that. Kind of in a similar vein, a bill that has gotten some coverage just because it's, I think, kind of intriguing to people or interesting. These paddle wheel raffles, maybe folks have been to fundraisers that have, you know, sometimes they're meat
sometimes they're meat fundraisers.
Meat in the paddle wheel?
Yeah. You win meats.
I'm just picturing a paddle that's made out of like flank steak, just flopping on the peg as it goes along.
You get that one. That sounds
really good.
Sounds very safe, sanitary. Yeah.
Spray some hand sanitizer on that flank steak before you eat it.
So what's interesting about this is they weren't legal in Wisconsin. Paddle wheel raffles weren't. So a bill was introduced to make them legal. The governor actually vetoed that, though. This wasn't one of the 80-some that he acted on, or it wasn't one of the 80-some that he approved. It was one of the ones he acted on and didn't approve. He said that he didn't like that. He thought it might infringe upon tribal nations in Wisconsin and their Class 3 gambling purview. He said that he didn't want to infringe upon that, and he thought that, you know, gambling, paddle wheel raffle gambling, could potentially do that. So
but these go on off the books all the time,
right?
Still, like, it's a Wisconsin thing, right?
Yeah,
it's,
citations aren't issued for these very often at all. I think another person, somebody when I was talking about paddle wheel raffles with someone, they said that it's kind of similar to those rubber ducky races. Have you guys ever
A big one in my hometown.
Yeah, and so like that's a similar thing, like technically gambling as well, right?
In my house way. we just race rubber duckies around the bathtub. It's
yeah
cool.
do you set bets though? I'm obviously
of course. Yeah.
Well,
come on, children.
I mean, I'm sorry, Sean, we've got you on tape. This is your confession.
If you really feel confident in ducky, you'll put money where your mouth is, kids.
Well,
so that was one, though, you know, this is one of those bills like where there's a pretty interesting backstory to it. It's mm-hmm. like we didn't pay a lot of attention to this bill, but you're unpacking like gambling in
yeah.
Wisconsin,
mm-hmm.
which exists, but in sovereign nations, mm-hmm. not in the, you know, under state government's purview,
right.
Which is why it's a thorny topic.
Yeah. On a more serious note, the governor did sign 4 of Representative Nygren's HOPE agenda bills that have to do with opioid abuse in Wisconsin. One expands Badger Care coverage to peer recovery coaches, people that help with recovery for people suffering from addiction. Another one helps provide housing. And so this is part, I think this takes the number of HOPE agenda bills that have been signed into law to 34. So just an ever growing collection of, you know, initiatives there that Representative Nygren has sponsored in the legislature. So do you want more? I got more.
Yeah, you got
how
any
much,
other
how
weird,
much more
weird
do
little
you got?
Tidbits?
Give us
weird
ones? Give us the most obscure bill. And just read the technical description
okay.
of a really obscure bill to give the public an idea of what feels like most of these bills are.
Yeah. So, you know, you get a press release from the governor's office. The headline is Governor Acts on More Than 60 Bills. In this release are things like the bestiality bill, the paddle wheel raffles. So you pull those out. But some of the other ones in here are things that people probably haven't heard much about or won't potentially hear much about, except right here and right now.
Mm-hmm. We'll do anything for subscribers, man.
Yep.
You're getting the real info here. All right. So here's one. Assembly Bill 699, now Act 142, allows individuals who are 12 or 13 years old to provide caddy services without being an employee of a golf course, and eliminates the requirement that these caddies use caddy cars.
Hmm.
So before
that's a pretty approachable bill, actually.
Yeah,
so you can have these adolescents, you can bring your own caddy.
All right, here's a wonkier one. Senate Bill 512, now Act 168, creates a pre-filing notice requirement applicable to a dispute between a condominium association and a unit owner.
Oh.
Pre-filing notice requirement applicable to... So I'm guessing if there's a conflict between the association and an owner before they file...
This is
really behind the scenes process. And I'm like, what is that? And then you go read the bill. There's a t-shirt out there in the world that says read the bill.
That is true.
That I need when I'm reading through these.
Let's pause and just admit we don't know what every bill says.
Yeah.
But if we covered those bills, we'd darn sure find out. We just wanted to give you a little example of the kind of bills that the governor is signing. They're very specific, somewhat parochial, and could be the reason you see a bunch of bills coming through here when we have divided government is because these are the types of topics that they're dealing with. They're not partisan topics. They're really specific and often technical.
Yeah.
Well, I feel totally caught up now, both on broad national political issues and on the minutiae of state government here in Wisconsin.
Good.
Thanks, guys.
All right.
You are so welcome.
We probably don't need to do any more podcasts because nothing's going to change.
Yep. Time to go listen to some Mace and watch some Welcome Back, Cotter.
I own the first season. If you would like.
It's time for a
binge. Know what we're doing this weekend.
Yep. Actually, yes. You're in.
Well, Sean Johnson is WPR's Capitol Bureau Chief.
Laurel White is WPR's Capitol Reporter.
And John K. Wilson is our resident politics nerd. You know you like that. You know
you like that. You know you like that. Maybe you've been trying to stave off Wisconsin winter by obsessively following every single news story there is. Or maybe you're looking to catch up after a couple of weeks away in a tropical paradise. Either way, you can get the information you need when you subscribe for new episodes of the WPR Politics Podcast. You can do that on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, Google Play, and many other podcast apps. While you're there, leave a rating or review to help other people find the show. And you can always welcome yourself back to any of our past episodes by going to WPR.org/politics. I love the country grub. It feel good to hear people singing welcome back. And I ain't even selling the track because I'm that Harlem cat. The names have all changed.